Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Hello, halflings! It's me, Jasper William Cartwright, and I am joined today by...
Hi. My name's Olivia Kennedy, but you can call me Liv. Thanks. Thank you so much.
Woo!
Yeah.
And
also me. My name is Jeremy Cobb. My pronouns are he, him, but Connor Alexander calls me Jeremy Captain Audio Cobb.
We've tried to do them
in the past, but we keep forgetting. So I decided I'm gonna start doing them again.
Problem I have is I have such a like set intro for this now. Like I'll say it like I think I like to say it afterwards. You know what I mean? Because otherwise I'm interrupting the flow.
What if you
of the
like
extremely
what if you
set intro?
Just start it like with like he him halflings.
No.
What if you do that?
No. I don't want to celebrate being a. I don't want to celebrate being a man that much.
Like, I say,
not a thing to shout
it's
about.
Me, Jasper William Cartwright. Pronouns he him.
It's welcome to the he him hour with Jasper William Cartwright.
Invited one she
him. Halfling.
Let's stop. The guest is already dunking on me, and I haven't even introduced
excellent.
Them yet.
Free black time.
Oh no! Swiftly moving on from this subject. Entering the Halfling Superdome today, and we have a very special guest from outside Xbox and Ox Venture. It's Andy Farron. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I love what you've done with the Superdome. It looks amazing in here.
Thank you so much. We just put up a few little decorations.
Yeah, we've had a couple upgrades recently.
Bit of bunting.
The carpet's lovely.
Thank you.
Got a nice mural. Yeah, it was a choice to put a carpet in an open air.
Yeah, but like it's green because it also kind of looks like AstroTurf, you know?
Really,
so it's
really
like,
paid off. Yeah.
It wasn't green at first, but there is a lot of mold. It turns out
open
air Superdome in the UK, a lot of rain.
Yeah.
A lot of rain.
We had enough money to open it, but do not have the money to maintain it.
No.
So,
you got to spend money to make money, Jasper.
Yeah,
exactly.
So
and
true.
This is making us zero money.
Yeah,
so
we should
super
probably like charge
we spent a lot on this
or
too.
Some, or something. You know, we did so much. support us on Patreon. We need more stuff for the dome.
We need
to build a retractable roof.
Yeah.
Or I guess we built a roof, then we made it retractable, but we didn't make it unretractable.
I see.
So unfortunately, we retracted the roof and it's just stuck.
And then
we need the money
that's
to
just it.
Yeah. To put
it's a one time thing, the retracting.
Yeah. Just, we've tried ourselves to like push it back out, but we're so weak, we can't do it. Yeah.
We are just three halflings in the face of a giant roof on a huge superdome.
Yeah. So, it's not even a halfling size superdome. It is a giant
full regular size superdome.
Halfling size superdome is just a dome, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
surely,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's just a regular dome for everyone else.
It's a little dome, yeah.
Absolutely.
Hi, Andy. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Andy.
Thanks
Welcome
for having
to
me.
The show.
Excited to be here.
We're very excited to have you. We've got a bunch of stuff to cover. We definitely want to get into, obviously, talking about Outside Xbox, Ox Venture, and obviously the new campaign which you are currently DMing, which is very exciting. And we'll get into that in a bit. But we have to start off where we always start off with our guests, Andy, which is how did you get into all of this nerdy stuff? What was the origin story for you as a little nerd?
For like
it all
specific,
go wrong?
Specifically tabletop
what
stuff or like
all
video
nerd
games
stuff.
Stuff.
Just like
all
a normal
nerd
job.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I was very big into video games as a kid. Like I had I was a Sega kid, not a Nintendo kid. And so I think like being a Sega kid makes you...
So that's where it went wrong.
Yeah, it makes you a lot more kind of weird and isolated because no one, everyone else is playing Nintendo. And you know the console
playing Sonic.
Yeah, I was a Sonic guy.
Oh, yeah. Had a Mega Drive.
Yeah, Mega Drive. And, you know, being a Sega kid, you become quite... Those console wars, they're really fierce back then, you know? Mm-hmm. And there were lines in the sand that you just didn't cross. And so once you were a Sega kid and everyone else was Nintendo, you become isolated and weird.
Yeah. Mm. It makes you withdraw.
That explains the Sonic fandom.
Yeah.
And look where we are now.
Do you have an OC that you'd like to show us?
No, we're
just
all,
Google Andy the Hedgehog, I'm sure.
I'm going to do it right now. I'm going to post the results in this chat.
No.
Andy the pregnant? Andy the, okay, let's not go there.
Okay. Cool.
There's a movie called Andy the Talking Hedgehog.
Yes, I'm aware of this, and it stars Dean Cain.
Yes, and Tara Reid.
Wow.
What on earth?
Check out the IMDb trivia page for that.
Oh my goodness.
If you're on it.
Oh, wow.
IMDb.
Okay, that's definitely a new stretch goal on the Patreon. We will do a watch along with Andy.
Andy the Talking Hedgehog.
I mean, surely they have to come to you for like the rights to do it, Andy.
Well,
it
is based on my life, yeah.
Yeah.
Trivia, this movie contains a hedgehog.
Wow. Oh my God, that's amazing.
This movie was banned in Greece, France, and Swindon.
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 Swindon. It's
what?
Swindon.
How can you ban a movie in just like an area of one country?
What's Andy up, the Hedgehog Swindon? Is a certified member of the Council of Andrews A2. If you start Jethro Tull's Aqualung at the opening scene, the whole movie takes on a new twist.
Okay, this has been edited since the last time I looked at it. If you Google Andy the Talking Hedgehog IMDb trivia, there is a cached version of this which says this movie is based on my life story, which it isn't. And I don't know who added
that's so funny.
I don't know who added that to the IMDb trivia page for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody
IMDb,
the
like,
last, huge
like
props to whoever did
the last piece of the last piece of trivia is that the hedgehog that played Andy suffered with severe gender dysphoria when filming. So hopefully the hedgehog's in a better place these days.
Wow.
Yeah, hopefully.
What, like heaven? Wait, what do you mean?
Well, yeah,
no, I mean, like,
hopefully the hedgehogs live. I don't think.
Hopefully they're living their best life. That's not
R.A.P., no.
Okay.
Oh,
honestly, it's been 5 years, so the hedgehog might be dead.
Who knows? I don't know what the lifespan of a hedgehog. And do you know what? Honestly, I don't think we need to find out because Andy, carry on telling us.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah.
You're a Sega, not Nintendo.
Yeah, I liked video games. I got really into fighting fantasy books. Mm. If you ever read those, the Choose Your Own Adventure ones, those were sort of my introduction to like fantasy. And then I got really into sort of Discworld, Douglas Adams, those sorts of novels. And that was like my sort of entry point into geek culture, I guess. But it was more sort of on the sort of video game and tech side of things than it was the sort of fantasy side of things. That's been more of a relatively recent development, like the tabletop stuff.
Yeah, sure.
That makes
sense. What were some of the video games that originally got you into it?
Good question.
So, I mean, all the kind of Sonic the Hedgehog platforming stuff as well, but there was an RPG for the Mega Drive called Shining in the Darkness that I remember playing as a kid, and that was the first sort of fantasy-based video game I played. And my parents had a thing to sort of to encourage me to play games that I bought instead of just playing them once and throwing them away. I wasn't allowed to get a new video game until I finished the one I had before.
Wow.
And I had to sort of present my parents with the end credits of a game before I would be permitted to get a new one.
That's incredible.
At least they're taking an interest, you know. I love that.
Like, I mean, it's better than most parents' approach to video games, which is just no. It's like, so, you know.
But it was great. I developed a strategy, which is like, you know, side-scrolling beat-em-ups like Streets of Rage. You beat that in like 3 hours, and great, that's done. But I remember wanting to play Shining in the Darkness, and I got it for my Mega Drive. And that was like a 100-hour JRPG. And I was like, I have really shot myself in the foot here. So like
JRPGs take it to a whole nother level. So it's
months later, I'm still dungeon crawling, killing slimes. I'm like, oh man, I could be playing Sonic 3.
Parents are like, it's been like 3 months since Andy asked us for a game. What is happening?
Exactly.
What is going on?
And I'm there struggling
if
with
you didn't like a game. Like, what happens if the game was bad and you're just having to force your way? You're just like,
I have to force my way through it.
Yeah,
and that's a skill that's come in handy later in life, actually, because
when Rock's Venture started.
yeah, for Rock's Venture. No. It's I had to get a lot of like capture for video games for our day job, and there's a lot of times where I've had to play through some awful games to get really specific bits of capture. There's one, we were making a video about, it was about like sarcastic achievements you get in games. Mm. And there's a game, a terrible PS2 Xbox game called Secret Service, where you play a Secret Service agent. And right at the very end of the game, you can shoot the president and you get an achievement called the exact opposite of your job.
Oh, no.
I had to play this entire game just to get to the final level and accidentally shoot the president. And it took took hours and hours. But, you know, I think those early days slogging through games I didn't enjoy set me up well for that.
Mm. See, the thing is, kids these days won't understand because they could just trick their parents by going on YouTube and Googling Final Fantasy X end credits. You know what I mean? It's not the same nowadays. Work anymore. You know, there's so many shortcuts.
I couldn't even think of that now. That's genius, Jasper, actually. Wow. Okay.
Plus, there's so many guides.
I guess, thanks. Yeah.
What parents need to do now is get really good at the game themselves and be like, 1v1 me, bro.
Let's go.
If the kid can beat them, you get your next game. If not,
you get a new game.
Get good.
That's actually a fantastic parenting model, which I might employ, honestly.
Only buy your child fighting games and force them to surpass you.
Yeah, just absolutely body your kid at Street Fighter 6 and be like, go home and be a family man.
You good yet?
Do better, okay? Do better.
Oh my goodness.
So, speaking of capturing video for outside Xbox, and obviously, you know, that evolves into Oxventure. How did you start with outside Xbox? What was the kind of, you know, journey into that? Was it journalism? Was it content creation? You know, how did that trajectory start for you?
So I've never really been what you would call a video games journalist from like the journalism side. Like the jobs I had before outside Xbox, I worked at Sony for 2 years as a writer for the official PlayStation website, playstation.com. That was my first job in the industry. And then after 2 years, I moved from PlayStation to Xbox, and they were just launching a...
Speaking of console wars, are you even still alive?
I know.
Like,
I crossed the barrier. I'm a planeswalker. I crossed between the two worlds. But
live to tell the tale.
They were launching a service called Inside Xbox, which is supposed to be like... I don't know if anyone had an Xbox 360, but there was a blade on the dashboard where you could get like Xbox news and stuff directly on your dashboard. And it used to be like text panels, but they were moving into video stuff. So when I started, they wanted someone just to write text panels, which is what I started doing. But then the service became a video service and they were like, okay, your team does video now. And I'd never done video before, had no idea how to do it. We started off, like I was sort of producing it and writing stuff, but we had an agency like actually making the videos, and then they ended up giving us a video team, and we sort of learned on the job how to make video game video as we went, kind of trying to make stuff that would appeal to us if we were like clicking through an Xbox dashboard looking for news and stuff. We did that for 4 years. It turned out to be quite popular, got a bit of a following there, and then Xbox sort of moved away from that model and they closed down Inside Xbox. So I decided I wanted to kind of carry on doing the same sort of stuff, but independently. We went onto YouTube. I brought Jane and Mike on board, who were both games journalists. Jane was at GameSpot. Mike was at the official Xbox magazine. And we just started making YouTube videos. And we were sort of toiling away in semi-obscurity for like a year or two at the start, you know, doing, you know, good work. But it was, you know, just finding that audience. And then... I think we were just in the right place at the right time for that kind of YouTube surge. We found that audience. We started doing list videos, which turned out to be like super popular. That's what really found us the kind of audience
people
that we have now.
People love a list.
They love things in with numbers above them. And yeah, it just sort of snowballed from there, really. And now, you know, it's actually yesterday, I think, was our 11th anniversary of Outside Xbox.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Which is like
years.
I know, on YouTube in particular, that's just like as ancient as it gets, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone else makes all their money and gets out, you know. Not us.
I'm surprised you didn't zoom in in a coffin here.
Like, yeah, right.
11 years on YouTube.
11 years on YouTube, if you can imagine.
I didn't realize it was around for that long.
Well,
immediately I was like, oh, like a vampire. Yes, yes. And I was like, wait,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, an ageless being.
Yes, ageless.
Yeah.
YouTube vampire.
I've been a fan of YouTube since the 2007 to 2008 era. So like, I know Anthony and Ian from Smosh just like bought the company and got back together and everything. So like the old school YouTube, I'm like, dang.
Yeah, we weren't quite that old school, but I recently went to a YouTube creator event, and they had a sort of like icebreaker thing where they said everyone, you know, like, you can go around and fill out your bingo card if you can find creators who have done this, or creators who have a podcast, or creators who do this. And one of them was like a creator who's been on YouTube for over 10 years, and I think I was like the only one there, so everyone was coming up to me and going, can you fill out you. Can you tick my box for me, please? All these children.
Do you think that was aimed at you, or do you think they thought there were?
Yeah, maybe they just wanted to get me involved. Make me feel like I was part of the fun. Yeah.
That's fun. I guess I'm genuinely quite interested to hear like how you found, you know, YouTube as a platform has evolved over those 11 years. You know, I think that YouTube and, you know, podcasting and things like that do evolve at a quite obscene rate at times, you know, with new features kind of constantly getting brought in and things like that. Like, how have you found kind of just, you know, staying, you know, where you are and doing what you are at the level you're doing it over those 11 years? Cause that's no small feat, honestly.
Yeah, man. It's hard because, YouTube, you know, they talk about the algorithm, right? The kind of the thing that governs what people get shown in their feed. And I don't think even the people who work at YouTube understand the algorithm. I think it's sort of gone Skynet in the background, and they don't really know what's going on.
Yeah, for sure. The algorithm has a personality and it's very demanding. You know what I mean? It's like sat there just being like, no, I don't like this kind of content. And all the people at YouTube are like, okay, yeah, sorry. Let's tweak that.
Oh my goodness.
It's kind of like trying to stand up on a waterbed and you're just trying to keep your balance the whole time, and it's just like throwing you this way and throwing you that way. There's been this whole thing with shorts recently, like but before that it was like, oh no, we want really long videos, things over 10 minutes, because you know you can put more ads in that. But then they're like, actually TikTok's really popular, so everything has to be short. I think if you try and chase trends, you're always chasing them, right? You're not on them, and it's hard to catch up. It sounds you know, like common sense, but just making good content hopefully is enough to sort of bulwark yourself against the algorithm. But it is hard because no one understands it. No one knows really what to do. I've had like conversations with the people at YouTube who are in charge of the algorithm. They're like,
you tell me.
I guess. Yes. So it is quite baffling. Like, I feel like I've recently, I'm sort of in the process of starting my own YouTube channel, and like I've had meetings and, you know, ask people questions and everything like that. And like, you know, very earnestly, people are giving me like extremely contradictory advice because they're like, well, this is kind of what worked for me. I don't know if it'll work for you. And it'll be like the exact opposite, or what someone else has just told me, never do this, because when I did this one time, it just didn't work and it was bad. Yeah. So, that's why I think genuinely it is impressive, you know, that you like have stayed at the level that you have and done so well over the course of 11 years. Because I just think it's a really, really tough gig.
Yeah, well,
I think
thanks.
Got, like, a loyal audience.
Yeah,
well.
We built an audience early who have kind of stuck around, which is nice. But also, I think one of the key things for YouTube channels, and particularly why a lot of them fail early, is a lack of consistency. I really think consistency is important. Like, even if you only upload one video a week or one video a fortnight, if it's the same day and the same time, people know when to expect your content, and that's important in building an audience, people knowing what to expect and it being there.
Like, if we so try so hard to like avoid missing a week, like with Dicebreaker, where like if we miss, the algorithm's gonna be angry at us. We can't do that, and like it's a lot of pressure. But like, consistency is definitely key.
Yeah.
Yep, for sure. There's nothing quite like the flop sweat of like seeing that deadline coming up and being like, oh please, I really want to go and eat food, or like go to bed, or
I would love to exist.
You know, but I have to by midnight, you know what I mean? I've got to press upload.
Yeah.
You know, it's
the content treadmill. It's hard work.
So how did our Arx Venture come about?
I was literally
going. Just got a hard pivot.
Yeah, well, Arx Venture was, I mean, it was a, you know, a spin-off of the main channel, and we got to 2 million subscribers on YouTube, and we were like, we should do it like a celebratory video, or something special, you know, to celebrate this milestone. And people have been asking us to play D&D for absolutely ages. I don't know why, but they were like, yeah, we think we would enjoy watching you play Dungeons & Dragons. And we knew Johnny Chiodini, former guest on the show, friend of the show. And they were interested in DMing a game for us. And we were like, oh, that'll be a, you know, a fun one-off video. We'll get Johnny to come in, DM a game for us. We'd never played before. None of us really knew what we were doing. We sort of made like, not like joke characters, but kind of quite like very thinly sketched characters, basically,
yeah,
for
like
this. Because we didn't.
Archetypes, you know?
Yeah. We didn't think it was going to really going to go anywhere. And none of us had played
before. Yeah, this TTRPGs, it'll never catch on.
not even just that. Just I didn't think that we thought it we'd be very good at it or it would be entertaining or fun. But then we played it and we were like, oh my God, D&D is amazing. This is so much fun. Yeah. And the video did really well. It was really popular. I think, like, that first session of us playing D&D, over a million people have watched it on YouTube, and it's it is so none of us know what we're doing, which is kind of it's kind of embarrassing in a way that that's out there. But also, you know, it's I think a lot of people get intimidated by, you know, shows like Critical Role or Dimension 20, and they look at us bumbling around. They go, "Oh, I reckon I could do that."
Yeah,
it's relatable. Yeah. Well, I think there is something to that, right? We live in such a world of like really curated content, you know, where everything is like almost with a fine tooth comb. We go through everything and we, you know, we don't put anything out unless it's like absolutely perfect. And one of the things that I, you know, always love and talk about is the fact that Jeremy and Unati basically met during our first ever episode. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, you know what I mean? It was like half an hour before we recorded that, we all jumped onto a Zoom and we're like, this is kind of what we're going to talk about. And you can hear that in the episode. Like, it's like, but, and I think there's like so nice.
I don't
about
think most
it,
people
you know what I mean?
Can, weirdly, though. I don't like everyone I've
oh,
talked
no, no,
to.
Oh, no, that's what I mean. I think the vibe was so immediately amazing. For
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think like that's one of my favorite things about when you start playing an RPG with somebody that you don't really know. It's a fantastic way to get to know them. So like that probably comes across really nicely with Cub and the Caterpillar, I would assume.
I was gonna say, I feel like there's something also endearing about watching people, especially if you're you enjoy the game and enjoy something. For me, like if I enjoy whether it's a game or a movie or anything, watching a piece of music, watching somebody discover it for the first time and really enjoy it is like, wow, it's like it reignites my love for the thing because it reminds me of all the things that made me really love it in the first place. And I feel like watching people, like, is there, I think for most people playing TTRPGs, there's that moment where it clicks and they say, oh, I can
this
do anything.
Yeah.
And that's just a
and
wonderful
DM gulps.
Thing. Yeah, exactly.
The DM goes, uh-oh. I've made a monster. What have I done?
Do you remember what that moment was for you, Andy?
Yeah. So I remember in the very first episode that we played, Johnny had set up this story of I forget exactly what the circumstances were, but a small boy had been polymorphed into a rat. And it was being set up like this man was hiring us to find his son who'd gone missing. And we entered this room and there was a Johnny made sort of specific reference to a sort of rat that scurried out of the room. And we were like, well, that's clearly important. And I tried to catch the rat and I rolled super well and caught it. And then the druid in the party, Ellen, she did speak with animals and talked to the rat and found out that the rat was the boy. And I was like, oh no, we've ruined the session. Like we've jumped to the end. And we had a break in filming and I went to Johnny. I was like, oh, have we just like skipped the whole story? Is this, do we need to go back and restart this? And Johnny was like, oh no, that's fine. We'll just go from here. Like the story will continue from here. And I was like, how is that? That's, I don't understand how that works, but it's like, that's the core.
That's a good DM as well.
I mean, Johnny is incredible at rolling with things and improvising as well. And I understand that's a very specific skill, but it just blew my mind that we hadn't ruined their story and needed to start again. It was like, no, this is how it works. That hadn't clicked with me at all before that moment.
Yeah, and then it evolves into, right, now I want to ruin their story. That becomes every player's mission to be like, Duncan, how can I derail and get around what the DM has planned?
How can I force us to need to re-record multiple episodes of this show?
Yeah, at least one. We're going to get Johnny. We're going to have to re-record at least one.
I've got a real reputation in the comments of like derailing stuff, but I really consider myself more of like a lever puller of a player. I'm like, oh, I want to go, you know, I want to go and advance the story. And they clearly want us to do this. So I'm going to go and do that, you know. But
see what it does.
Yeah, I want to see what it does. And, you know, I like
that's
it.
What
it's
you
a
want,
good role.
Though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. For sure. It's really interesting to me, actually, like having a reputation as a player. I don't know about like you, Jeremy, and Liv. I think maybe you, Jeremy, have got a little bit of this because of the whole like friendly neighborhood DM like thing. True. But I feel like I haven't got to a point of, you know, kind of infamy within the TTRPG space yet where like I've got a reputation for being a certain type of player. Mm. And I'll be fascinated to know when that happens. What like my moniker will be. You know what I mean?
Vary my characters as much as possible. But I realized recently that I keep making characters who are really good at doing flips. And I was like, why? Why have I done that?
You do consistently describe them doing flips, actually.
Just which is kind of funny. Flips. It's just, I think it's because I really want to do flips. I think that's what it is. that's my calling card.
Every character has to be flips. I don't know what it is.
Get Look, a Juji character never who flipped. Can't flip.
Please.
Juji never flipped, okay?
That's what I was thinking.
We all know that Juji could flip. Juji's so capable of doing a flip, it didn't even
I don't know. I did not get flip vibes.
No, she's a brittle woman.
Exactly. I thought she'd snap if she flipped.
Brittle woman.
But the threat is always there. It's
Chekhov's
flip in the background.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
you know what, Liv? Let's record a one shot where Juji tries to flip.
Juji flips.
It takes so long because like she keep rolling like shit, and it's
forgetting that she can like polymorph into like a monkey.
Yeah,
or not polymorph, but a wild shape rather. Into
wild shape.
Wild shape.
Yeah.
Well, I guess like maybe going. Well, question actually first. You are DMing now, so kind of moving away from you as a player, but as a DM.
Yes,
you're currently DMing Deadlands, which is a Wild West setting, and I'd love you to sort of tell us a little bit about that. But first of all, have you done much in the way of DMing before? Have you DM'd for like Oxventure or like you know for like a public thing, or is it have you just done home stuff? I'm just kind of interested in what your kind of journey as a DM has been before we get into that.
Never DM'd before, ever. Deadlands episode one of Deadlands was the first time I've ever DM'd ever.
That's like, a lot of prep.
I know. I did.
I was like, man, I should really get like a practice game of Deadlands going. And then I had my first introduction to the life of a DM, which was trying to organize a group of people to play Dungeons and Dragons. And it just I couldn't
the old foe.
Couldn't do it. Yeah. Couldn't do it. Yeah. So I didn't have a chance really to do that. I tell you what was kind of an education in DMing was doing D&D in a castle. I was at the same session as Jeremy and Jasper, and I wasn't DMing, but I was NPCing for Luke, who was DMing the game. Mm-hmm. And so I was playing all the NPCs, but also Luke burned through like all of the story he had for session one in about an hour. So so in this kind of the DM's lounge, we were like basically coming up with the story together, kind of like suggesting things and throwing things around and stuff. And I found that really fun and enjoyable. And then as I was sort of sitting there being an NPC and Luke was doing all the description and stuff, I was feeling like the urge to jump in and start describing things. So I was like, no, that's Luke's job. But, you know, I was getting the pull and I was like, all right, I think, you know. Mm-hmm. I think I'm ready to do some DMing myself at this point. Yeah. But yeah, I unfortunately didn't get an opportunity. Like everyone on our team is so busy all the time. Mm-hmm. And I've got like a million other things I'm doing all the time. And I was like, I think probably the best way for me to learn is just to start doing it.
So I mean, honestly, that's the piece of advice we always say is like, yeah, just give it a go. I think especially you've had the like privilege, like, you know, much like I did when I first started DMing is like having a fantastic DM. You know what I mean? Like you were kind of learning from Johnny the whole time.
Oh, absolutely.
In the same way that I learned from Jeremy and was like, oh, well, okay, like I'm not going to be as good as Jeremy, but like I'll give it a go and it'll be, you know what I mean? It'll be fun. And I do think that's like a big part of the kind of like education, quote unquote, when you get to play with someone who is as good as, you know, either of those guys. I'm just going to pretend that Jeremy's not here whilst they
Sorry, guys, I'm just going to the bathroom. What did I miss?
Yeah. Jeremy's just like ignoring you like, no,
nothing really, dude. I was just saying that Johnny Kidini is a great DM.
Yeah, right? They're awesome. Johnny's the best.
That's so good. That's so good.
Yeah, I am absolutely not on anywhere approaching Johnny's level of being able to improvise and roll with it. I have, you know, I plan out my story And I'm like, this is what I want to happen. And I'll let the players sort of, you know, have fun in it. But this is what they're doing, basically, which is, you know, probably that's how early DMs go, I expect. And then as they get more confident, they are more confident letting things unfold in ways that they haven't planned for.
Yeah, I think it branches, honestly. I think it tends to be like that at the start, you know, of like, this is kind of a relatively set thing that I have planned and you'll go through that. But then I think it really branches into like the hyper planners and the like the improvisers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel
like
you tend to sort of then start to drift into one of those particular like areas.
I write down three bullet points for my sessions and then I do the best I can.
The Dungeon
Beginning,
Dudes,
middle, end, go.
The YouTube channel, The Dungeon Dudes, who I actually got to meet, not them, weirdly, but their partners at Gen Con. The Dungeon Dudes were there, but I didn't meet them. I only met their partners. But they just released a video, basically, what class are you as a DM? Or GM, in fact. And it's like, the wizard is the one that's like, we have all the books there. We have everything planned out. You know, we have everything. And then, like, the sorcerer is like, it's the story just flows out of me, man. I show up.
Yeah.
We just see what happens.
They're all different. This is like D&D horoscopes. I'm very into this. I need to take a look.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
I got the pleasure of getting to actually play with you as the DM. Amazing. Yeah, so I would say that you were a brilliant DM. I had an absolute blast, and I'm very excited to share those episodes with everyone. I guess, well, I'm now just interested if we could do a quick sidebar of like signing a class for each of us as our DMing style.
Yes, I'm so glad you suggested it. I'm
multi-classed pretty heavily because they were like, okay, I'll try and run through. Let me look at a list of the classes here. So barbarian was, or rather the artificer, I think they went alphabetical order. So artificer was all sorts of, you like to make models, you like to make minis, you like to make terrain, you like to make extra things, you build.
And it's just like shit. I'm good.
A lot of emphasis on like crafting things for the game, even sometimes homebrewing stuff very specifically. Also barbarians like big monsters. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Just from what you said, I feel like your vibe is warlock because you're getting your power from Jeremy, right? So
Jeremy's your patron.
There we go.
Jeremy is kind of my patron. Honestly, genuinely, that's not 100% incorrect. Like some of the best things that I have done as a DM, mm-hmm. I feel like are things that I've, like, Jeremy has done for me, and then I've gone like, ooh, what if I try it like this? Like, put a little of my stank on it, yeah. And I'm like, there'll be frequent times during my games where I'll just, like, give a little kiss to the heavens. And
me appears in the sky and smiles down.
Made out of clouds,
just proudly.
Just this big, big, big smile.
Yeah, apologies, Jeremy. Yeah. Carry on.
I would say you have some barbarian in you, Jasper, because the barbarian likes the big old monsters. They like the big cinematic, epic fights. Yes. Throw a big monster at them.
Yeah, that's definitely
I would say we all have some bard in us. Probably bard is definitely much more of the performer type, focusing more on the character story, different voices, all the different things like that. Cleric is like, make sure everybody's doing okay, check in, you bring in the snacks, everybody takes everybody takes their bathroom breaks.
Most of the stuff we do is like based on creating content, so I could bring very loud crisps for everyone to enjoy, but I don't think it's going to sound very good when we record.
We don't get to do that. That's like it's very rare that I get to like kick back, have a drink, have some snacks, like, and it's whenever I do it, I'm like, man, this is the real good D&D. This is like how it was meant to be, you know what I mean? Like, what I do is great and I love it, but like, oh, this is fun. Like, this is real fun getting to, like, chow down on some snacks and kick back and whatever.
I don't know if there's a class for this, but I one thing I've been really conscious about doing while DMing is I really want to create, like, one awesome moment for each player, like, in the session. Yeah. It's like, I want them to have that hero moment in each session, like, whoever we're playing with. And I'm just like, how can I set things up so that they get to, you know, be the hero or kick, you know, how can I place the ball so they can volley it into the top right corner?
Oh,
that's some kind of like support class or something, right? Surely.
I don't remember all of them. I know Druid's world building, Fighter's tactical combat. Can't really remember the Monk. I can't remember the Paladin either. Rogue is just traps and sneaks. Sneaks. Sorcerers.
I'm going to actually go ahead and throw out, Andy, I might give you a little Rogue. There's a moment, and I think you know which one I'm talking about, where I might give you a little Rogue, because that was sneaky. There's some sneaky shit in one of the episodes, and safe to say, it scared the ever living crap out of all three of us sat at the table for that particular episode. We were like, no.
Deadlands is a really horror-y game, so it really lends itself.
It really is. Mm-hmm. It really, really
is. Did you choose Deadlands, by the way? I'm curious. Did you choose that system?
Yeah.
And if so, why?
Yeah, I did, because it seemed to sort of just encompass all of my interests, really. Like, big fan of, like, Westerns, like Red Dead Redemption and 2 are, like, my favorite games of all time. I love the kind of aesthetic and the storytelling vibes. Potential of that setting, but also the Deadlands aspect of it, the Weird West aspect of it. Mm-hmm. So Deadlands is a sort of alternate history United States where there's all this kind of weird stuff going on. It kind of speaks to my other love, which is horror. I'm a big fan of horror. It's got so much potential for horror. Like, the different episodes that we've got in this Deadlands series, I've got, like, John Carpenter style, like, 80s medical horror in there. And then we've got, like, Tales from the Crypt style kind of weird horror in there. Then there's just sort of, like, straight up nasty Western horror. And then and then just like real, like the episode that Jasper is in has a sort of like carnival aspect to it. So sort of
inherently creepy.
I think as well, just to jump in and kind of give you some flowers. There's a moment which I really enjoyed towards the end of the second episode, which obviously I'm not going to spoil for anyone. But it really kind of led into that, and I felt like you really gave me a kind of like gift of being like, hey, run with this, and like to really run into that and go for that kind of like horror element. And I feel like it's kind of rare that you get to kind of flex like that. And I really feel like the system suited it. And and you as a DM were very generous in like offering that, you know, like you were saying earlier, like liking to give everyone a moment. I really felt like you kind of gave me a moment and I was like, oh yeah, hell yeah, I'm going to run.
And you absolutely made the most of it as well. That's one of my favorite bits. Yeah. Really horrifying.
Truly so horrifying. And anyone who is listening to this after watching that episode of
they'll know what we're talking about exactly. For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. They're just curled up in a blanket, shaking like, oh, I remember.
Can you tell us, Andy, a little bit about the mechanics of Deadlands? Not have to go in depth, just because for anyone who hasn't played it.
Okay, so it's based on the Savage Worlds rule set, which I don't know if you're familiar with, but it's a lot more. I find it a lot more actiony than Dungeons and Dragons. It's basically you have two dice that you roll for everything. You have your skill dice, and then you have a wild dice, which is a d6. So your skill dice determines how good you are at something. If you're very good at shooting, for example, you'd be rolling a d12. If you're very bad at something, you might be rolling a d4. The number you're trying to get on your rolls is a 4. Mm. So every roll, you will roll your skill dice, and you'll roll this d6, which is your wild dice. And you want to just get a 4 on either of them to succeed. So the thing that I really like about it is if you're untrained at something, so say you're trying to pick a lock and you've never picked a lock before, you don't know what you're doing. There are a couple of ways to succeed at that. You can either succeed on the wild dice, which is, a D6. There's always a chance to do that. If you're untrained at it, you're rolling at a disadvantage. You'd be rolling a D4 with a -2. So theoretically, the highest you could ever roll is a 2. But if you roll the highest number on a dice, it explodes and you get to roll it again. And because you're rolling a D4, there's a 25% chance it's going to explode. Yeah. So you get so many of these moments where people are doing stuff that shouldn't work, but it does. And it's like that thing in when you're the hero of a movie. Mm-hmm. Right, it's like this shouldn't work, but because you're the hero, you manage to just squeak through. You manage to just succeed, and then because things explode and they just keep exploding, sometimes you can get these like ludicrously like overrolled situations where people end up like rolling a 26 with a d6 or something. It's just absolutely wild.
Well, I was going to say, because there's the raise system as well, right? So it's like where if you roll multiples of 4, you effectively that's like, so if you get an 8, that's a success with a raise. If you get a 12, that's a success with 2 raises, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And like, it really does, I think, like you were saying, Andy, allows for that kind of like feeling of just like luck, that untrained person can just like, I don't know, I saw this on CSI Miami, sticks a lock, like a, a hair clip in a lock, and it just goes and opens, and you're like, oh my God, wow. Yeah. And it also then allows for like, that really skilled person, that moment of just like complete badassery, where they just look at the door and it just goes and opens, and you're like, how did you even do that? And like, I don't know.
Yeah. It's also got this system called Bennies, which are basically inspiration from D&D, but you start with 3 of them and you're sort of encouraged to give them out freely and use them freely. And you can use them to re-roll, or you can use them to soak damage in combat. So if you take a wound in combat, you can spend a Benny and try to sort of basically tough out the wound, which I really like as a sort of
tense your body and then spit the bullet out.
Kind of feels like what they're going for with this system, but it so lends itself to that kind of like gritty Western combat, which I really like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I've just remembered this is an extreme tangent, so I apologize, but I've actually just remembered a story where I think I basically got like a success with a raise in my life trying to pick a lock. Basically, I had
in real life.
So my parents were out of town, and I had this was like my first ever like proper girlfriend was coming over to my house. Mm-hmm. We got the train, went back to the house. It was pretty late at night. I had no way of getting back from this, from like our house. Like, we had to be here. And I got home and realized I'd forgotten my keys.
Ooh, that is my
nightmare. And I was like, oh. And then, but I remember my mom always used to, because she was like paranoid that if you had a key in the door on the other side, it stopped people from being able to pick your lock. I don't think that's true, but that was what she thought. So anyway, I know that in the back door, the key was in the was in the other side, and we had a cat flap, and I was there. I'm absolutely mortified because I'm there with my girlfriend trying to appear cool, and I'm like, I've got my hand in a cat flap with a spade, like a kid's spade, trying to knock the key out of the keyhole onto the floor, pull it closer to myself and whatever. Anyway, I'm there for about half an hour and I'm like, oh my God. And she's like, look, I'm just going to get my mom to come pick us up. We'll just have to go stay at my mom's house. And I was like, oh my God, this is like the worst thing. And I literally, kid you not, I went, oh, for God's sake, slammed my hand on the handle and it swung open. It was literally like, I'd managed to twist the key enough to unlock the door
right
with the spade.
Right.
Because it definitely wasn't unlocked when I first got to the back door.
Wow.
And I've never, ever felt so relieved in my life. That yeah. definitely felt like a success of the race.
That was like your DM saying, this is taking too long. The door swings open.
Yeah. 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 It's just like the door swings open. Yeah. yeah. That's fully
looks
what
like you
it
loosened
was.
It.
Absolutely incredible. Yeah. It's safe to say my mum since stopped putting the key in
smart.
The
mouth. I was going to yeah. say, it's cool. Yeah.
There's a huge problem with that particular plan.
Yeah. yeah. And you, this was yeah. all an exercise in proving to your mum why it's a bad idea to do
why
that.
Why it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's very nice of you to do that. Yeah.
but to bring it back to Deadlands and this this adventure that you're currently doing, your first time DMing,
yes.
absolutely wild. Huge congratulations.
Thank you.
From what I've seen, you're doing a great job for the episodes that I've watched and then the episodes that I was lucky enough to be part of, you're doing a great job. How has the experience been for you? Like, what's the, you know, how's it been? Because I'm always interested in asking this question to our guests, especially when they're doing it for an audience, mm-hmm. just because I think it is so different that home game, even if you are pre-recorded and you can stop and all of those kinds of things.
Yeah, it's been like really rewarding. I've really enjoyed it. And like, I love storytelling. I write like some fiction and stuff in my spare time. This is such a different discipline. And it's a skill, absolutely a skill, to sort of be able to take your hands off your story and let other people touch it, which is, I think, not something that you really get in any other medium.
Like medium, yeah.
That kind of collaborative storytelling. So that's been, I mean, I'm aware of how it works, but to have it, you know, happen to your story for the first time is definitely a learning process.
You've got to let other people touch your story. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's really important.
Yeah.
To have just as many people touch your story as you can.
Yeah, exactly. but also, yeah, I find it like fun and enjoyable, but also enormously stressful. Like, I don't think I've ever concentrated so hard for such a long period of time, because we record for about, I don't know, four and a half hours, and I'll finish every session with like just an enormous concentration headache. Like, I've never had to think that hard about things for so long. So yeah, I walk away from it, you know, go to the pub next door to the studio, have a pint, calm down, and I'm like, okay, all right.
Yeah, have a little chill.
That was a legitimate thing for me. Like, as a player, normally I can kind of just like, unless it's like been a heavy session, I can kind of walk away. As a DM, frequently I will have to like decompress there is just such a like, you know, mechanism going on inside of your mind. There are so many moving parts that I feel like it is really hard to then just go back to being like, cool, what am I going to have for lunch? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's just so hard to like switch back into that mode.
And like,
focusing.
But the amount of preparation required and before we record, I'm like, any time that I'm not sort of thinking about the story or coming up with like new little twists and turns is like time I'm like, oh, I should be doing that. But it's the exact opposite of as being a player. Like, we do a lot of live shows at Comic-Con and things like that, and I never get stage fright before we go out in front of an audience, because I'm like, I'm as prepared as it's possible for me to be, because the whole point is this is improv, right? I don't know what's going to happen, and I just need to react to things as they happen. Whereas with DMing, I'm like, oh, what if this doesn't take them long enough, I haven't got anything else to sort of extend the length of, I'll need to think of something for them to do if they get through this too quickly. And it's like, I'm always overthinking it. I think that's probably something that will come with experience as well. But because this is my first time ever doing it, I'm just like constantly overthinking everything, which, you know, isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it's also, you know, quite a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that aspect of
it. I'd say halflings, it comes with the territory.
I think it also gets a little bit easier given time. Like, when you get a bet, like the better of a handle you get on not just the process of GMing, but also the mechanics of a specific game, and the more you can just be like, oh yeah, I know how this game works. I know all the different things, the ins and the outs and the ups and the downs. And I know what people really like, and I kind of have an idea of what a lot of people don't like. Then it gets a lot, there's still, you know, a lot of pressure and a lot of concentration. But a lot of it's like, sometimes when I play D&D, for example, and I'll DM D&D, I won't even have a full stat block. I just like, yeah, I know how this works. So I'll just
Yeah, exactly. And, like, you know, they're gonna have like a plus two to hit or whatever, and like just
yeah. Or you can just intuit it, right? Because yeah. you're like, meh, okay, yeah. this is a this size creature and right. it's got like, you know, this kind of thing. So I'd probably give it like a plus one to dexterity, but it's gonna have a plus five to strength.
Yeah.
So, you know, like yeah, yeah, you can just kind of intuit based on like the thing that you've described.
Yeah.
We'll get there eventually.
We've recorded 9 episodes. We've just got the finale to do. Currently 3 episodes have gone out on the YouTube channel. And I'm like watching them as they go out, and I'm looking at things I did in episode 3, and I'm like, well, I wouldn't do it like that anymore, you know. I feel like I've,
yeah, yeah,
I've moved on. 2020.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I'm like, oh, I would do that too. Better. Yeah, yeah, I would do that better next time. Or,
Do you mind if I ask, Andy? So, could you give us, like, and the audience, like a kind of blurb of what the story is in your show that you're doing? Not like spoilery stuff, but just kind of like, what's the vibe? What's going on?
So I wanted a structure. The way we're doing it is we've got a 5 player team, but we're running it in the same way that sort of Luke ran his Blades in the Dark series that was very good and on our channel as well, which is where we have a sort of opening session where it's all of the players, and then we split them out into smaller teams and have like teams of 2 or 3 go off to do sort of episodes, so you get a little more like character interaction with smaller groups and give people like more chance to sort of shine and get their character across. So we started off with basically the story is that these 5 characters have all come together answering a newspaper advertisement looking for bounty hunters. The first episode, they all get sent on a mission to sort of prove their worth if they're up to taking on these bounties, which was a train heist. They had to do a train robbery. They did very well at that. And then they were given the rest of the story, which is that there's this widow whose husband and son were killed by this gang. And she wants them to go out and kill these 4 gang members. So each episode is a different sort of bounty, a different individual bounty. Oh. And they're all, the gang has all split up and moved on with their ill-gotten gains and sort of set themselves up as kind of corrupt authority figures, and it's about sort of tracking them down and killing them.
Like a boss battle.
Yeah, basically. Each one has a sort of a main villain that they're there to kill in these different, and the settings are all quite different, which is something I wanted to get across as well. But yeah, it's very sort of self-contained. I feel like, I hope that you could sort of come into each one and just watch them as a self-contained story of them going after one bounty. And then, yeah, the whole thing's going to kind of tie up with the finale, the last bit we have to shoot.
Exciting.
I was wondering as well, because obviously when approaching the Western genre, there's a lot to love about it, but it also comes with a huge amount of baggage, just culturally in terms of the manifest destiny, genocide, etc., etc. I'm curious, because I'm assuming that's probably not in the series, but how does Deadlands as a game approach those elements? And because when we did it, we were like, when we did our Western series, I was like, I ain't just doing a Western because yo, but if I do a Western, I have to essentially take the colonialism out of it. And so we completely transplanted the setting to essentially take on a lot of Northern African influences and also not even like taking out the manifest destiny elements and making it post-apocalyptic. So instead of it being like, we're coming here, taming the wild frontier, it's more of a, we lived here and then things happened and we're having to sort of rediscover the new changed land and learn how to live in this place. I'm curious, how did you as a GM going in approach those elements just from a, like in terms of how you're going to approach this material? And also how does the game itself address those topics? If in fact it does.
Yeah. Well, Deadlands has been going for quite a while. I think it's over 20 years old from its like original incarnation. And it's one of those ones that has been sort of finding its way as it goes, let's say. Mm-hmm. And I think like the most recent one, the one we're playing, the Savage Worlds Reloaded edition, I think is a lot more sensitive to the obvious problems with the Western genre. There are things like some of the character classes like lean very heavily into sort of Native American spiritualism, which is something like none of our players felt kind of qualified to engage with, because you know that's not any of our backgrounds and that's not any of our story to tell, but that is there for people to engage with. And I think it's hard because it is such a tough setting to, I mean, I have a degree in American history that I'm sort of like struggling not to try and like get too bogged down in it, because it's not, I don't think it's really the medium for me to be telling, and I'm not the person to be telling those stories either. Mm. So I think you have to sort of just acknowledge that it's an alternate history of the United States. Things are different. The whole continent has been split in half by a eruption of something called Ghost Rock, which has changed technology. The Civil War went on for like 50 years longer in this universe. And
it's not even the old West. It's like just the new West. It's like
West.
Yeah, it is hard. And I think it's definitely worth examining.
Did you find it helped, like, having your background, like, with American history? Do you think that helped you, like, helped guide you when you were like GMing?
I think it's like a good system and setting for like critiquing a lot of problems with the genre, particularly, and also like a lot of problems with the kind of presentation of America in that era as well. That kind of manifest destiny, American exceptionalism, is an idea that I think the system is really set up to undermine, because you have this setting where it's like America's the greatest country in the world and look, we've conquered the West and stuff, but then you have literal monsters that have been unleashed by the kind of forward pushing of that frontier and that industrialization that has led to these monsters coming out. So it's metaphorical ills are literal in the world of Deadlands. So it's, you know, maybe a little heavy-handed, but at least it's, you know, acknowledging that stuff, which I think is interesting.
At least there are some consequences for their actions.
And I think a lot of it as well can boil down to, you know, that thing that you said, which is like knowing that if this is a public game, like what stories you're telling and what stories you aren't telling. You know what I mean? I think that that's like an important part of it. And I think, honestly, a lot of the times you'll see people and be like, is that your story? Like, are you sure? You want to tell that one?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that's like a lot of the times when we have critique or issue with people running any, you know, any games that are set in history or in a specific time or culture or whatever, it's always like, cool, but like, what's the, you know, is there anything within this that you feel like particularly unqualified for? And a lot of the time, it can boil down into that. Did anyone have anything else that they wanted to specifically touch on before we go ahead and start to wrap this episode up, or we good?
No.
Amazing.
I think so.
Andy.
Yes.
The only thing that remains for you to do, and this can be from Deadlands, this can be from Oxventure, this can be from anything that you can think of.
Okay.
We always ask our guests for a tale from the table. So this is basically an experience you've had in and around TTRPGs, which has just sticks out in your mind. It could be funny, it could be silly, it could be really heartfelt and emotional. A time that you burst into tears and cried, or, you know, we've literally run the gamut on these stories now. Yeah. I can't think of like a genre that we haven't covered. Anything that you can think of that sticks in your mind when with regards to a TTRPG experience.
I fell off a stage once. That was good.
Classic TTRPG experience.
Yeah, we do these live shows, and I used to sort of get up out of my seat and move around. They used to give us these like Britney mics that we would wear.
Oh, I love the Britney.
Which was, you know, fun. With a mic pack, so we could actually like physically move around the space. Mm-hmm. And I used to like get up and move around a lot more. And there was
toxic.
Yeah, exactly. There was an episode we were doing when I got completely covered in spiders, and I was like, oh, you know, I'll run around like I'm covered in spiders. And I mistimed mistime a jump and ended up going over the back of the stage into the sort of audio area. I don't think it was as obvious from the audience as it was to me, who did fall off the stage.
I
think I sort of managed to recover a decent amount, but it was that was quite embarrassing. I think,
or is it commitment to the role? You know, like you're so in the moment.
Yeah.
It's just method. You know.
Yeah, the audience probably ate that up.
Yeah,
but I can definitely imagine the moment where you've kind of landed and you're like, "Am I all together? What the just happened?"
The fact that you got back up, I would have just laid face down on the floor and just not.
Yeah.
Oh no!
Forever.
I'm not going back out.
Our most recent live show that we did, I think, is like a really good example of how good Johnny is at rolling with stuff. They were describing a pub that our characters were in, and they said that the pub started to make, they were trying to say the pub started to make a creaking noise, but they accidentally said the pub starts to make a croaking noise. And then we also made a joke that the pub was a giant frog. And Johnny was like, yeah, the pub's a giant frog. Yeah, that's what's happening now. And then we all ended up getting inside this giant frog. And then it became like a huge part of the story that we were traveling around in a pub that was a frog. And I was like, where's this? None of this can have been pre-planned. This has all come from like one slip of the tongue.
One tiny. Yeah,
and this is about half the story now. The fact that we've rolled into town in a giant frog and now everyone's worshipping this frog. And it's, I was just sort of marveling at the fact that so much story could come from one slip of the tongue.
Yeah,
the thing that worships is frogs. A pub, though. I mean, I guess that makes sense. You know,
yeah, literally, slip of the tongue. Yeah, big old tongue. That reminds me. I was very lucky to go on stage with not the D&D podcast when they came to Manchester, which is obviously where I am. And I have such a distinct memory of being so caught up in the end of the show. It was so hyped. I basically rode in as a 20th level character and effectively killed Sauron. It was like an alternate universe with a band of boobs. Corbett was DMing, which probably explains a little bit as to how it was so
big
off the rails.
Dunkle energy,
Big Dunkle energy. And I was like a bare-chested, very ripped halfling with a giant afro, and I like double katana'd the Tower of Sauron and destroyed it and this whole thing. And I was so hyped up, and then I didn't know that this was a tradition. The Apple guys start getting up and they start throwing dice into the audience because it's like a tradition where they like they take whatever dice they were using and they throw it in. And I got so carried away. And I just remember absolutely yeeting this giant metal dice into the audience and being like, "No. I've killed someone."
I was hear a body
terrified.
Hit the floor.
Real fastball to the forehead.
Honestly, it was like you know, like the softball pitches, mm-hmm. they wind up and they do that real pinged, like underhanded throw.
Yeah.
It was like that,
which is faster.
Like across
you
the
can
heads
get better speed with a good underarm pitch
for sure. Yeah. I was so caught up. I yeeted this thing like it went into the darkness. I have no idea. And luckily, I managed to bunch of people came around to the side door and were like, and we're basically like, I was like, you know, doing signatures and stuff. And someone was like, "Oh, I caught your dice." And I was like, "Oh, you're uninjured, right?" And they were like, "Yeah." And I was like,
"Oh." I was going to say, you're going to have someone come back in like 5 years with a D20 lodged in their forehead.
Yeah,
lodged
in their head. Yeah. Or like
the
their eyeball is
you rolled
just a D20.
20. The 20 is sticking out.
Yeah.
Here for payback.
They have 20/20 vision now because I literally yeeted a D20 into
two
their
D20s eyes. Into their eye sockets.
Boom, boom. Yeah.
Yeah, boom. But no, the fear. I didn't throw another dice in after that because I was just so preoccupied thinking, like, I'm just going to hear someone start
screaming.
I'm surprised
you can, like, even touch dice now. I would be like, no, I can't. It's
no,
too much.
This is a weapon that I cannot use in my hands. Kind of like, you know, like Jackie Chan having his hands being, like, registered weapons.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
me
yeah,
and
yeah,
D20s
exactly.
Now. I can't in good conscience use these. Absolutely amazing. Andy, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
It's so thrilled to have you on and, you know, love Oxventure and everything that you guys are doing over there. And I'm so stoked for, excuse me. I'm so stoked for everyone to hear the episodes and everything. It's going to be an absolute blast. So please, before we wrap up this episode, tell all of the halflings where they can find you on the internet and what stuff you have coming up. If there's anything you want to plug, the floor is entirely yours.
Yeah, so I do video game stuff over at youtube.com/OutsideXbox. We have a second channel called Outside Extra that's worth checking out as well. And our tabletop stuff is all at youtube.com/OxVenture. We're doing our Deadlands series at the moment. Every episode goes out on Fridays at 8 p.m. UK time. That's when they premiere. Please do check them out. Been really enjoying it. Jasper obviously is coming up as a very cool, very exciting character. I can't wait for everyone to see them. I also have a podcast where my Outside Xbox co-host Luke and I review Disney Channel original movies. It's called Mom Can't Cook, and it's a lot of fun if you enjoy listening to adult men review Disney Channel original movies from the late 1990s.
You must have watched some like really bad movies, right?
Oh yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Some truly just like
Yeah, was Smart House one of the ones you've done so far?
Smart House was the very first one we did.
Oh!
We, wow. had to lead with Smart House.
Yes!
What a movie.
Oh. What a movie. But like Camp Rock, though, have you gotten to Camp Rock?
We haven't gotten to Camp Rock yet. No, we're kind of doing 20, like...
That's late 2000s, Liv. You're 10 years
yeah.
off.
Yeah, I guess
you're 10 years off,
just,
baby.
You've got so much content.
You gotta go through
to
the Even Stevens movie. You gotta go through...
I keep talking to people about Camp Rock, and then like there's a scene in the second one where they all come in and they're like doing like a Camp Rock chant, and they're like, they're just doing, oh, it's yeah, I can't wait to hear the episode about Camp Rock.
We'll get there eventually.
Yeah,
I think. Yeah.
What's been the best one you've done so far? Just out of curiosity.
Oh, well, our absolute favorite one is Brink, which is the one about rollerblading,
yes.
inline skating. Absolutely amazing. Love Brink. It's my favorite. For our birthdays each year, Luke and I buy each other cameos from Eric Von Detten, the star of Brink. And and then I got Luke one from Sam Horrigan, who plays the villain in Brink, kind of counteracting the one from... we're basically making Brink 2, but through the medium of cameos from the actors who were in Brink. So we tell them what the other one said in the cameo last year, and then they reply, and it goes back and forth. So yeah. it's a lot of fun.
That's incredible. Oh, wow. Yeah. That definitely, Jeremy. We need to start buying each other cameos for our birthdays. So I feel like we can get real original with some of these.
Yes,
I cannot believe that I hadn't heard the name Brink in such a long time. I used to watch all these movies, so
I haven't heard that name in years.
Yeah, it's really taking me back.
Looks over a pair of rollerblades.
I have like memorabilia from everyone. There's that one South Africa movie where it's like about, it's a DCOM that tries to tackle apartheid.
The Color of Friendship.
Oh, yeah, The Color of Friendship.
No!
So ill-advised. So
okay,
ill-advised.
We gotta watch that.
It's not called that.
It is actually The Color of Friendship. They have full racial slurs.
It is a rough watch.
Oh my god. Okay. Wow. I need to watch this. Yeah. I will watch this on the page.
There's a 9/11. There's a 9/11 decom.
What are you
There's a 9/11 decom called Tiger Cruise.
Yeah. Where, I remember this one.
That?
Yeah.
It's about this girl who goes to visit her dad on like a naval warship, and then when she's there, 9/11 happens.
Is that Hayden Panettiere that plays the lead in that movie?
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
I saw all
looking
of these,
at it right
as
now.
I said. Xenon, Girl of the 21st Century, and of course, Xenon the Zequel.
Xenon the Zequel is actually the episode that is going out. So next week, so the week that this episode is going out, we're doing Xenon the Zequel.
Wow. Wow. Cannot wait. Strap it, everyone.
Phenomenal. The color.
How do we move on?
Sorry, my mind.
That's the title of the episode, baby.
Wow.
Oh no. I'm gonna be like trying to go to bed tonight, and then I'm gonna just, my eyes will open like Color of Friendship.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna be like, whispering to my partner, like, did you know there's a Disney Channel original movie?
There's a full on scene where the South Africa, they have a white, it's a black family who gets a South African exchange student who they thought was going to be black, but it's a white girl who shows up. And the white girl and the black girl, the African-American girl, are trying to be friends. And there's like a scene basically where I think the white girl uses a South African word that is a neutral to refer to black people, but the black girl thinks it's a slur. And then the white girls know, like, oh no, this is the slur, and says the slur. And then later on repeats it to her parents. And the dad thinks that the white girl called his daughter that, and is like, oh, and is like charging into the room. It is the
He is ready to kick that girl's ass.
This is insane.
It is a child. Oh.
Yeah, I watched this when I was like seven or eight, I think.
I need to see this.
I'm looking at some like stuff, and there's like a
maybe a clip or two at most on YouTube.
I think I need to see this.
Oh, there's a picture of the two of them like sat in like a room, and they're looking at each other over their shoulders, like.
Well, I mean, they become friends. You know, it's anti-racism in the end. It's just.
Just takes a minute to get there.
Yeah.
Well, we've all learned something new today. Disney and thank you so much.
Yeah, Disney, like, don't worry, everyone. We got this.
Yeah. this is ours. This is our area.
Hey, this is like, hey, we can fix racism. Just give us a sec.
Oh my God, thank you. We'll
give us 90 minutes, baby. <maybe. laughs>
Oh, gosh. Oh, wow. Well, that's just an incredible note to end on. Jeremy, where can people find you on the internet?
I'll be starring in, actually, you can find me on the Disney Channel, where I'll be starring in The Color of Friendship 2.
Oh, wow.
Featuring Andy Ferrand as the titular other friend.
Look, I'm just saying that, like, if we can get a picture of one of us looking over our shoulder, and then Andy, you're looking over your shoulder, and we both Photoshop together, then that's post.
Yeah. Yeah. There it is.
Amazing.
Oh, Cheryl from The Wire's in that movie. I was just looking it up. What are the characters?
Hey, look,
from
you've all got to start somewhere. Yeah, you've all got to start somewhere. Wow. We've all had a casting breakdown and gone, ooh,
yep,
like. Money's good,
yeah.
But
oh, sorry. Just the tag. One more thing, and then I'll stop. The tagline is: "Look beyond black and white, and you'll find the color of friendship."
No, stop it!
God.
Oh my God. Stop it!
All right, I'm done.
Oh, we're gonna find out that the director for this was like, I don't know, like freaking Ava DuVernay or something. I'm like, no, why?
It was directed by someone named Kevin Hooks.
Kevin
written
Hooks.
By Paris Qualles, Q-U-A-L-L-E-S. So I don't think it's quails. But yeah, I don't know if any. Well, Paris is from Harlem, so I don't know. Paris might be black.
Hey, I've just looked it up. Kevin Hooks, black guy, directed a couple episodes of Preacher. So
whoa, and Paris is also black.
He's doing bits.
Okay.
Yeah,
look, they went for
all
it.
Right. A whole black team. We love this film now. We want to support this film.
Yeah. Everyone go watch this film. Get Disney Plus accounts. Go through all the Disney Channel originals. I have no idea if this is on there.
The Color of Friendship is on Disney Plus.
If I find out The Color of Friendship is on Disney Plus.
Oh, it's on Disney Plus.
It's on Disney Plus.
It's on Disney Plus.
It is, though. It is. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
We have to do it. We have to watch this.
Yeah,
we have to watch this.
Thank you, Andy, for the content.
We're doing this. This is a bonus episode. It has to happen.
Wow.
Like, it absolutely has to happen. Andy, if you want to come along and put yourself through that twice, you're more than welcome. You could be...
Andy's like, I'm good. Thank you so much.
You could be the white representative on that particular episode. I think it's really important that we get balance. Given the 50% of that show is about a white person. So,
yeah.
You know, I feel like we should get your views on it as well.
Yeah, I have seen it once. And that was... It did feel like enough, but, you know.
No, what's funny is that technically we are equally split because both me and Jasper, we're both half
white.
It all makes sense.
It all works out. It all works out. Yeah. The Color of Friendship
Incredible.
2 is starring just me.
It's just you sat
it's
there.
It's Jasper learning to love himself.
Me learning to love myself.
Still just as many slurs, weirdly.
Your wife is there, like outside the door, like, honey, are you okay?
The temptation to now edit my face onto both characters on the Color of Friendship poster
gotta
is outrageous. That's gonna have to be the cover art for this episode now.
Yeah.
And also the name of the fucking episode is gonna have to be The Color of Friendship now, because we've spoken about it for way too long for it to
we
not
have,
be.
Oh,
so
half end the episode.
Thank you so much, Andy.
Where can people find you?
Where can you find me? You can find me on Twitter.
Yeah, oh my God, please.
You can find me on Twitter and Blue Sky. Jeremy Cobb 1, Cobb with 2 P's, the number 1. You can find me on Instagram, at the Cobbmeister. You can find me on the show The Quantum Reactor, a sci-fi movie review podcast that I host with my friend Andrew Coons, friend of the show. Follow me on Twitter for our pods or cast.
When are you reviewing The Color of Friendship?
Jasper, we have to leave.
Oh boy, I don't know if it qualifies. Sorry, yes. We're coming out with an episode on Across the Spider-Verse soon, so check that out. I'm also on the Roll For It stream, Project Marana. I think it's actually called Lake Marana. I don't remember the name of the show, but it debuts on, it's Marana is in the name, and I'm in it. It's Call of Cthulhu. It airs on Thursdays at 12 p.m. Pacific time.
Somewhere.
I'm also
He's not done, folks.
I'm not done.
He's not done.
I'm going to be at D3 at Sea. In the fall session, go to d3atsea.com mm-hmm. and sign up to play with me. We're going to be doing, speaking of North Africa-inspired Western settings, I'm going to be playing in Utarum. So if you want to play in Utarum, come sign up, D3 at Sea. I think there's usually more things that I have to plug, but I'm gonna pull the plug right there on myself.
Please,
where can they find you?
We need to wrap this up.
Liv. You can find me. I'm Olivia Dustock Magic. I'm at Dustock Magic on the socials. You can find me on youtube.com/dicebreaker, where if you want more tabletop stuff, you can find it. And sometimes we hang out with Outside Xbox and Outside Extra, and it's in so yeah. That's fun.
Got some videos of us playing Werewolf on YouTube.
Yeah.
Check them out.
Oh yeah, we did that.
And we did there's like a three-way crossover where we did skeletons and we did
Awaken in a Strange Place as well.
Yeah,
we Awaken in a Strange Place. That's fun.
And also subscribe to youtube.com/3blackhalflings. We're doing stuff, I swear. Okay, thank you, bye. Okay, thank you, bye.
I remembered what I was gonna say. It was Casual Quest Live, twitch.tv/casualquest live to watch me stream games.
Jeremy,
okay,
you don't get more.
I did it. I said it, it's
don't
over.
Get more.
It happened.
Okay.
Jasmine, right, what about you?
You can find me on The Color of Friendship 2, a sci-fi adventure extravaganza, where play the titular character who's stuck on a spaceship drifting through space.
It's Moon? You just do a Moon remake?
It's Moon.
The Color of Friendship.
I'm doing Moon,
but
it's me meeting myself and realizing that I'm half black, and it's like, whoa, that's a big revelation. That's a big spoiler, I'm sorry.
I'm so sweaty.
I'm
literally dripping. It's crazy.
It's acting and racism.
I'm actually tipped for the Oscar this year. It's me and Robert Downey Jr., who's in Tropic Thunder 2, and are coming up for it. Similar premise. You can follow me at JW_Cartwright on all of my social medias. I'm on other stuff. Games and Feelings. Force Country Podcast, catch me at Deadlands on Oxventure. Obviously, please check out Andy's stuff. It's amazing and so excited for you to hear those episodes. And you can find the show. It's at 3blackhalflings. That's the number 3blackhalflings on all of our social media. We have a cool Patreon. We do merchandise. All of the links are in the description below. If you want to support the show and help us keep the lights on, it would mean the world to us. So please feel free to go find all of that stuff in the description below. We can also find links for Andy's stuff as well. But that is it from us. Remember, look past black and white and see
the color
of Shire Friendship.
The color of the halfling inside yourself.
The color of the halflings.
So long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk.
Yay!
Thank you.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.